Hello and welcome to this edition of the Grant Us Knowledge podcast. I'm Grant Goulibon. I'm Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania, of course, is a statewide group dedicated to breaking barriers to opportunity for Pennsylvanians, barriers to entrepreneurship, barriers to educational achievement, barriers to community groups working together voluntarily to solve problems. Basically, you know, trying to provide the maximum amount of liberty, freedom, and opportunity for every resident of Pennsylvania. And my topic for today is something that is often a hidden barrier, or not always as apparent a barrier to opportunity as some of the more overt things. We're always much more cognizant, I think, of what the state legislature is doing in terms of passing laws that, in many cases, restrict individual freedom, restrict liberty, restrict opportunity. But once those laws are passed, we always get into the second phase of implementation. And to implement those laws, state agencies go about promulgating regulations. And regulations are basically administrative laws that state agencies such as the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry, Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection, PennDOT, Department of Education, et cetera, implement to achieve the objectives that are set out in policy and in legislation. And they provide instructions and standards that individuals, businesses have to comply with. And while I think it's probably universally accepted that a certain level of regulation in society is necessary to protect public health and safety and make certain that that those basic safeguards are in place, oftentimes a proliferation of regulations in any given area can lead to a confusing and burdensome situation and very little regard for how the regulations will actually play out in the real world. And this translates to costs on Pennsylvania's economy. I mean, economic estimates of the effects of this range from anywhere from 0.8 to 2.3% of the state's gross domestic product, according to some studies that have been done in the past. Currently, there's more than 153,000 regulations on the books in Pennsylvania, and they affect nearly every industry within the Commonwealth. So the cost of regulation, the burden of regulation, is obviously a factor in every decision that businesses make in terms of whether to locate in Pennsylvania in the first place, to start up, and whether or not they can continue to operate profitably and provide jobs and opportunities for their employees and products and services for their customers. So today, to discuss the current state of regulatory policy in Pennsylvania and some of the possible solutions and improvements that we might be able to find, first of all, I have Martin Rodriguez. Martin is a policy analyst with Americans for Prosperity. Does a lot of work in the regulatory area. And Martin, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
No, thank you for having me, Grant. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
No problem. Thank you. Just to start out, I mean, in terms of your work in analyzing the regulatory climate in Pennsylvania and the way things are set up currently, what are some of the biggest flaws that you see in the current Pennsylvania regulatory environment?
Sure. I think, Grant, I'm going to start, you mentioned it in your introduction, and I think that's one of the most critical points that people need to recognize, and that is the difference or the distinction between regulations that support a legitimate government function and red tape, which in our view are rules that do not serve the public interest because their costs outweigh their benefits. So putting that in front of us, I would say that in my work, I have worked in many different states that I cover with Americans for Prosperity. I have to say I have to commend the General Assembly in Pennsylvania because there are a lot of creative ideas that have been introduced. Some of them have passed the House. Some of them have passed the Senate and are waiting in the House. But just to say there are a lot of creative ideas out there, and I want to mention a few of those to take your listeners to some of the solutions that are being introduced in the General Assembly. One of the biggest pieces of legislation that AFP supports, it's called the Fighting Chance Act. And the Fighting Chance Act, it's a pilot program that would take the regulations from the Board of Probation and Parole and the Bureau from Professional and Occupational Affairs. And what they would have to do is first they would have to count all the regulations they have in their books to get a clear picture of where they're standing. And then they would have a goal to reduce their regulatory burdens 25% by the end of a certain period of years. I believe in this case, it's 3 years. And that's very important because when you think about it, many of the agencies don't have clarity themselves of how many regulations they have in the books. Because in Pennsylvania, there's no statute that requires agencies to look back and see, you know, what they have in the books, what have worked, what, you know, it's obsolete and it doesn't serve the purpose anymore. So that's a good piece of legislation that we wholeheartedly support. And the Fighting Chance Act grant was enacted in a different form in Virginia, and they have had astonishing results. They identify over 1,200 regulations for removal. They were supposed to cut 77.5% of the regulations in the first year. They went beyond that, and that gives you a sense of the things that that can be accomplished if regulators work with the General Assembly in order to remove those regulatory barriers that, as you point out, are keeping opportunity from people and are keeping people from, you know, starting a business or expanding their business. So that Fighting Chance Act, it's a great piece of legislation because it would start with those two agencies at the beginning. But the idea is that after those agencies go through the regulations and find the cuts they need to make, the idea is for that program to expand to other agencies in the Commonwealth. So that's a great piece of legislation that we, as I said, wholeheartedly support. Another great idea that is floating in the General Assembly, it's HB 806. It's modeled after the Federal RAINS Act, and the RAINS Act and this piece of legislation that I'm referring now, it would require for the General Assembly, for both houses of the General Assembly, to approve regulations that have regulatory costs of over $1 million a year. And this is critical because, as you mentioned in your introduction as well, the General Assembly makes the laws, but then in many cases, they delegate an incredible amount of authority to regulators. And regulators, as we all know, are not elected, so there's not electoral accountability for the people making these rules. And in some cases, when they have overly broad statutes, they can go out of their way and regulate in ways that are not efficient for the economy or not accomplishing the goals that they were set to accomplish when the legislation was promulgated. So that's another bill that we believe would be transformational for Pennsylvania, because when you think about it, if you have your elected representative taking a stance on new rules, on economically significant rules, that introduce a point of accountability that is not there as we speak right now. So that's another great piece of legislation that we like very much as well.
You make a really good point about the fact that the further away that a the further away that a law or regulation gets from the people and their representatives, the more opportunity there is for mischief that takes the the law or regulation far beyond the spirit of where it was intended, and it allows for in some cases some pretty significant abuses in the process. And also the fact that we don't have a mechanism right now. We have a pretty fairly thorough mechanism on the front end as far as regulatory approvals for new regulations. But as far as looking at existing regulations, Martin, I know that there's some legislation out there as well that is before the Senate that talks about going back and looking at existing regulations and trying to take care of some of the problems and see whether or not those regulations are really necessary anymore. Can you talk a little about that?
Sure. That is SB 251 that would create the Office of the Repealer, and the idea is exactly what you mentioned, is to perform a systemic and independent review of what it's already on the books and try to find out if those regulations that are on the books, going one by one, if they actually achieve the purpose, they were set to achieve. You might think that, well, of course, if the regulation is supposed to accomplish A, regulators would have that in mind when they're writing the rule and putting it in the books. But there is a great study by George Washington University professor that looked at regulations and significant regulations at the federal level. But his findings, I believe, are relevant for state regulations as well, and why it is very important to have those lookbacks with the office, the independence office of the repealer that is being proposed in the General Assembly. And what this professor, his name is Jerry Elling from George Washington University, what he found, he took a look at regulations that were promulgated between 2008 and 2013, and he found that less than 25% of those rules were accompanied by reasonably strong evidence that the rule would achieve what it was sought to achieve, what it was sought to achieve by the agency. So having those retrospective reviews, it's critical in order to remove that red tape that we're mentioning, though, that can get in the way and gets in the way of entrepreneurship, of innovators, and workers trying to make a living, though. So that's another piece of legislation that we are very supportive of I'm glad you brought it up.
No, absolutely. And on that note, I think that provides an excellent segue to my next guest, who is someone that for several decades here in central Pennsylvania has had to live with the effect of government regulation in the cost of doing business. Bob Fisher. Bob is president of R.J. Fisher & Associates, engineering and surveying firm based here in the Harrisburg area. And Bob, thanks for being on the show with me.
Thanks for inviting me, Grant.
No problem. Bob and
I. Pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. Bob and I have worked together quite a bit over the past decade or so, whenever I was in my former capacity as a regulatory affairs specialist at the Pennsylvania Builders Association. And Bob, as we've talked about this many times in a number of different situations, primarily on environmental regulations, but this could be said for everything that you have to deal with in terms of the type of work you do. But as a professional dealing with land development and all that goes with that, on a daily basis, what are the biggest challenges you face in the current Pennsylvania regulatory environment?
Well, I guess one of the biggest challenges is the time frame that it takes DEP to process things. We have a project that we actually started back in 2014. It took us a while to get through the township with some litigation. We finally get through the township, and then we go to FEMA. Took us 2 years to get through FEMA, and right now we're on about a year and a half with DEP trying to process a joint permit. So you have regulations, and then how the regulations get implemented, and the time frames that they take to process the paperwork. And now, right now, they're using the virus as an excuse why they can't get to process the permit that just started last April. So,
and all those delays.
Didn't have the virus back then.
Exactly. Yes, but all those delays impose costs. I mean, both in terms of time, right, and money and lost opportunity. And, you know, in terms of what it adds, I mean, I wouldn't ask you to give an exact figure, but in terms of what it adds to the cost of doing business for the folks that you work for that are expecting these projects to be done within that time frame, you know, what does that do in terms of the delays and the costs associated with that?
Well, it's substantial, and here was a big lost opportunity. I mean, this developer expected to be in this spring, which housing actually did quite well this spring and this summer, and it's still doing well. And it would have been a perfect location and project for them to be involved with. So it's not only our fees and our time, but it's a lost opportunity for the developer to sell homes.
Certainly. Now, Martin, you know, Bob had mentioned about the permit delays and the length of time that it's taking, you know, in this case, DEP, to process permits. There's some legislation, again, before the General Assembly that would address that as well. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. There is actually, there are three bills that would take care of some of the issues that Bob has raised. One of them, it would put a 120 days within 120 day, a calendar days. The intention is for the agencies to reply in 120 calendar days with the intention, you know, to streamline the process. Because as Bob was mentioning, though, it's not only the delay and the cost that it adds to a project, but it is also the case where you have a delay and you have a negative answer at the end of the period, which, you know, it might be the case depending on the circumstances, but it would be great for companies to know if it's a negative answer, if they need to, you know, put some modifications to their plan. It would be, you know, more efficient if they know beforehand. So that's one of the legislations. It would modify the land recycling and environmental remediation standards, and it would place those timelines there. There's also another one for environmental permit approvals that would codify a new 30-day timeline, and this is for projects that are not site-specific, so more general projects that do not require such a detailed look at what the actions are, and it would set a 30-day timeline for, you know, rejecting or approving the permit. And we believe that those as well would be of great help for the business community in Pennsylvania and for the workers in Pennsylvania that their jobs rely on getting those permits in an efficient fashion.
No, I mean, that is so critical to, especially in the current economic climate where we desperately need to get the economy restarted, to begin to grow again. And again, you know, Pennsylvania starting out behind a lot of its competitor states from the get-go because of conditions that existed prior to the virus, and certainly any negative that Pennsylvania has in its business climate is going to be that much harder to overcome for a lot of those reasons. But, you know, Bob, you know, you and I, you know, in terms of the project, we worked on, you know, a lot of issues dealing with the Chesapeake Bay here in central Pennsylvania, with stormwater management. In terms of regulations that you've encountered that just don't make sense from – and in fact, you know, maybe even detrimental, you know, say from an environmental standpoint, you know, can you give some examples of those types of counterproductive regulations that don't do anything to achieve their stated purpose?
Well, I guess I can go back to what was that grant, like 8 years ago or so, and we tried to work through the Chesapeake Bay and tried to encourage DEP to have alternatives to the direction they were going in. Right now, we're seeing stormwater fees that municipalities have and stormwater permits. I mean, a simple house wants to add a patio lawn and a swimming pool. You're over 5,000 square feet. All of a sudden, you have another $10,000 to $40,000 added to the stormwater that you have to do. If you disturb more than an acre, now you think you have a 10-acre lot, I'm going to build up on the on this side of the mountain. If you build a home and a septic system and a driveway, you're probably going to disturb more than an acre, and that's an NPDES permit. That's a major cost that all of a sudden you add it to the cost of building a home. Now, my township here, we just installed, we took a beautiful, nice grassy field, and we turned it into a rain garden for about $750,000.
Oh, wow.
And they're spending about $1 million per year just to meet their MS4 requirements in the township. Now, for a resident, that comes out to about $66 a year that they're paying in a fee. But you figure if you own a warehouse or a church, the way they did it, it's not a tax, it's a fee. So if you have a large warehouse or if you have a church that has a lot of impervious area, we're talking anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000 a year in stormwater fees. You know, all of a sudden you didn't budget for that, and that's something else that really impinges on the viability and the growth of those type of facilities in Pennsylvania.
No, that's an incredible amount of hidden cost, and I think that you know, sometimes really gets lost in the fact that whenever regulations put in place, the issuing agency expects someone to comply with it, but really doesn't have a plan for how they're going to enforce that compliance. Or in many cases, I mean, as in dealing with stormwater regulations for individual homeowners, for homeowners associations. You know, those responsibilities get turned over to those folks who often have no idea that they are that they're responsible for those things.
Well, and granted, it goes back to what we explained to DEP eons ago, is we're spending our money in all the wrong places. The type of things we're installing have very little environmental benefit or environmental impact. But if they would allow us to go and install some forested riparian buffers, help the farmers out with some of the things that they need, because that's where 60 to 70% of the pollution's coming from. But they don't have the money to do it. Developers and municipalities will. And if there was a mechanism there to allow the developers and the municipalities to spend the money where you're going to have your biggest bang for the buck, we could do a lot more for the environment.
No, and that really ought to be where the focus is. It's not necessarily on the type of solution, but you know, trying to find again the cost benefit ratio that makes the most sense in terms of meeting the goal, meeting the compliance goal, and not necessarily about prescribing a solution and doing something that's one size fits all, that, as I know you've said many times to me, that it just is counterproductive, where you have to design things that you know won't work for a given site, but you need to do it anyway just so you can get an approval.
Right.
Well, both of you, again, this is tremendous insight, and I think, you know, it will resonate with a lot of people that are listening who have dealt with the same things. In closing, Martin, in terms of the legislation that you've talked about and given so much great detail on, again, you know, if there was one thing that you could point to say that, you know, would be a great starting point or the best possible starting point for reforming the regulatory climate in Pennsylvania, what would you say?
So I would say two things, Grant. I would say definitely the RAINS Act would be terrific, because it would establish that accountability mechanism that we referred to, and it would bring regulations closer to the people and have legislators waiting on each economically significant regulation. I think would make a huge difference going forward. So, going forward, that's one that would be a great start. But we also have to look back at what's already in the books, and then for that, I would say the Office of the Repealer would be a great start as well. You know, as I said in the beginning, there are a number of great creative solutions that have been introduced. Some of them have bipartisan support, so I don't think there is excuses for lawmakers to get to task and get some of them approved as quicker as possible, because as you said, especially now in this time of economic dislocation, it's more important than ever that we focus our efforts on things that would have transformational change for the Commonwealth. And I think those two would be a great start to move Pennsylvania to the next level.
No, very good. Bob, from your perspective, what's the one, if you'd have one thing to make your life easier and your work easier at this point, what would that be?
Well, I keep on going back to what we told DEP to do back when you're at DBA, Grant.
Sure.
Is allow us some other options to spend our money where it's going to have the biggest environmental impact, and then use a efficient time frame that we can get permits processed and approved.
Yep. Yep. A lot of common sense there, and a lot of great great ideas. And we will keep pushing forward to do this work, to break these barriers that, again, are standing in the way not only of entrepreneurship and job creation, but many times in the path of, say, environmental improvement by not allowing for innovation, which is what drives progress in whatever area that you might want to refer to. Well, Martin, Bob, thank you both so much for being on the podcast. This has been tremendous, and look forward to working with you more in the future. As I close here today, again, want to remind everyone that Americans for Prosperity is on Facebook, also on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania, and again, look for us working to provide the maximum amount of freedom as we go forward. So again, thank you all for being with us today, for joining me on the podcast. This is Grant Us Knowledge. I'm Grant Golubon. Have a great day.